Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Who's kicking us off today?
I don't know if we can...
kicking it off. Hit it, Mike.
I'll jump in. So, after last week, you know, our call on Thursday and kind of getting some things figured out, it's easy to kind of veer off path.
Yep.
So, kind of, you know, it's good every once in a while to have a little kick in the pants and say, hey, this is what we do, this is why we do it, and this is how we need to get there. So I had a good conversation with my sales guy. Hey, you know,
yep,
these people are putting us in a position where they're trying to get us to attach things, whatever. I said, you know what, it's not worth our time. It's not waste our energy. Stay focused on what we need to do, finding the right kind of thing. And I was, you know, trying to get offers out constantly. That's the big thing, you know, get offers out. So I've tried to actually had to refocus what I'm doing with offers, and it's easy to get lost. I know one of the properties I have under contract, I don't think there's any way I'm going to be able to sell it to my buyers, even though the numbers work for an ROI, but it's not going to work for what they're paying in that area.
Okay.
So
you think it can be renegotiated? How far off are you? What do you have it for, and what do you think somebody would pay for it?
We put it under contract, paying him 25. I figured, you know, assignment fees, whatever, put it to 35,
okay,
which, you know, that obviously gives me room to move. But even at 25, there's no way. So the ARVs in the area are like 50, and the numbers work. It's a 6.9 cap. But
come
to find out, there's a small corner of this zip code that is pretty tough area. One of my buyers I had talked to sent the information. He called me back and said, you know, that's one of the areas I won't even touch, even though he buys all over four blocks away from that zip code, from that corner.
Right.
Four blocks in either direction. He's like, there's shootings and stuff at that market all the time. He says that's – so I actually went back and re-looked at the area again and just studied it a little closer. And there's been very, very little sales or activity in that little corner of that thing in the last 12 to 18 months.
Are there some?
Almost none.
Almost none or zero?
Well – about two blocks away, there was one.
Okay.
But within that, there's nothing. And it's
that
there's
so
a big old
area.
So
you have that data on your from ListSource, right?
That I, you know, since I pinpointed the zip code itself and pinpointed it on the map,
okay,
it's still kind of spread out across that zip. There's a lot of blanks in there. You know what I mean? Because it's not like there's three blocks that they're buying it. And it's kind of a shotgun blast across that zip code. But in that particular corner, what really threw me off is there's a large area of government housing. I mean, huge, probably four blocks square of row houses, government housing that doesn't even show up on anything. It's all, you know,
so
obviously government.
Is anybody buying there? You have data that
right
shows somebody's buying there. Because if they are, skip trace them and call them.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm telling you.
Yep, go ahead.
If in every, right, any market like this, outside of Denver and a couple anomalies, people are going to say, I buy here, I don't buy there. But then you're going to run into people that say, oh, yeah, that place that so-and-so said they don't buy, that's the only place I buy. That's my favorite part of town. So that's why we go to, if that one particular buyer doesn't buy there, great. That doesn't mean nobody else does. So in St. Louis, we're getting properties up where one guy, he bought 160 houses in 2017. Serious buyer. He doesn't touch the north side. Great. A whole lot of other people do. Because the activity says it. And I even told him, I was like, wow, that's really crazy that you tell me you're not buying there, because I just pulled all the data off ListSource and there's tons of activity up there. And he goes, interesting. He said, I haven't run marketing up there in over 4 years. So one person's junk is a whole lot of other people's sweet spot, right? So
yeah,
that may be, right? You may be in a little corner or a little part of that zip where nobody buys. But what I'm saying is, don't, if that's that buyer's opinion, great. I'm saying go on your map, go to your ListSource data. Even if you have to go back to ListSource and just buy that zip code and then map it real quick and go back 12 months or, you know, 24 months, buy just specifically that data, because you'll get it for not very much. Go map it really quick and see if there's any activity in there. It won't cost you much money. But then you'll know, because you're identifying right here like a war zone or a no-fly zone.
Yeah.
Somebody gave you a thing that said, hey, I'll buy anywhere but there. So, okay, that's interesting. I wonder if everybody has the same opinion. That's where you can go right to the data and figure it out. So either you're going to go to the data and figure out, no, this isn't a deal, or you're going to track down a couple buyers that have been active specifically in that part of the zip code over the last 12 to 24 months, skip trace them quick, and call them. But you can do all that within 48 hours.
Sure.
So.
I think I did overprice it, because I have been talking to a lot of buyers that are buying in that area, just not haven't found any that are buying on that corner, basically. And they're buying houses, probably in the 15,000 to 20,000 range.
Okay.
That are in probably that condition. So having it for 25, I still think I'm just.
But you have to be at 10 to 15, probably 15 times.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I, after just digging into it this weekend and really trying to figure out that area, and been talking to buyers, obviously, and getting a better feel for what's going on over there. And so it's just one of those things. I'll have to just push through that one. I actually got a hold of the title company today. I'm a bit hesitant. I don't think I want to push it through because it's that vacant lot next to it, plus the house. They get done doing title search, and I'm going to have $400 to $600 tied up in title search. Even if we get to the end of this, that I'm going to be paying them for nothing.
You should you'll only be double check with title, but you'll only be charged on deals that get to the table, for the most part.
And that's I did talk to them.
I've never been charged on a deal that didn't close. Sometimes I've ordered like an O&E, which is outside of title work, but they don't expect 100% of the deals they pull research on to get to the table.
I spoke with my sales gal there, and she was fine. She was like, yeah, that's – well, we appreciate that. So she did say what you're saying, but at the same time,
yeah,
I don't want to stick them with – I want to have a good relationship with them. They're a big title company.
This shouldn't hurt it. It probably feels like, hey, maybe first deal or first few that you're sending through, but
that
shouldn't affect anything. That's part of their game.
No. She was very appreciative, though, that I had to give her a heads up.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. As soon as you identify this, go to the data and make a determination. Either I'm going to keep selling this thing, and here are the four people I'm going to call to get it moved, or we're out. We just happen to identify one of these little pockets. And that's good intel.
Yeah,
that's good intel, right? Either way, it turns out to be a positive. You either get a hold of the buyers and move it, or you learn your city better and your market. And here's the thing, guys. Brad did this on a house. He and his son bought one, so he gets his kids involved, which I think is fun. And he and his son went in and they bought a house in Memphis, and they realized after they bought it, the numbers were great. They realized after they bought it, it's in a total war zone. And they didn't know Memphis as good as they know now. It was early on. And so they're trying to get creative. Nobody wants to buy it. And every time they try and do something to the house, it gets ripped out. Well, right next door, here's what they figured out, is the local drug dealer that runs the city or that part of the neighborhood. I mean, this is just reality. And so every time they try and do something to the house, they go over and jack it up to screw it up because he doesn't want somebody moving in, messing up the operation, right? And, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. True story. So here's what they do. They sent their guy back to go knock on the door and see if that guy wants to buy the house. the drug dealer next door. I mean, this is just how it works. Now, we want to do some good intel ahead of time, right, obviously. But at the end of the day, nobody's perfect at this, and so they're looking for a creative exit. Because they actually, Brad, he used his own money with his son. They set up a company, and they went in and bought it, and they were going to do some work to it, this, that, and the other. But so they're just trying to get out right now, get their money back. I haven't heard the end of that story, but, you know, they had to come up with a creative game plan. Hey, what are we going to do here to get out of this thing? So it's just, you know, mistakes are going to be made, right? We live and learn and move on. But I think, Mike, you can avoid it, obviously, at this stage of the game. But I want you to go to List Source and just search that zip code over the last try 12 months and see what happens. See how many are in there. Look at 24 or go back 18 and see how many records it pulls.
Yeah.
Grab that list quick and map it. Throw it into Bat Geo.
There's a lot of activity out of this corner. I mean, like four blocks to the right and four blocks to the east. There's actually buying activity. The houses are more maintained. You can just tell it's a different, and you're getting away from that government housing area. So there's definitely, and I've called 25, 30 people out of my list there. And most of them don't. That's why I kind of come to the conclusion. Either they're, if they were going to buy in that area, it's going to have to be super, super cheap.
Right.
So even a couple of them, they say, well, yeah, I could, you know, the numbers are fine, but you can't get nobody to rent in there. So same rents, even though I was estimating like 800 at rents, realistically, it's probably going to have to be like 650 just to get somebody to live there.
Here's what you need, too. Here's what you need to do. You can do this right away. Go to go Section 8.
Yeah.
Type in that zip code. Call every landlord currently in that zip code that has a listing.
Yeah.
And say, hey, I've got a property tied up. I'm looking to sell the contract at this address. You buy in this little pocket of that zip code. What'd they say?
Yeah, I've done that. And none of them that I talked to on Go Section 8 actually buy in that corner.
Okay.
There wasn't that many actually in that whole.
Yeah.
There wasn't that many in on Go Section 8 for that specific zip code. There was only, I'm trying to think, there was about 15 that was on Go Section 8, and they were all away from that corner, basically. So that's why I kind of found out the corner's just non-conducive for much activity.
And here's what I think. The current owners, they're not going to be able to move it, especially with this intel.
Yeah.
You can really help them get rid of this thing that's going to sit. It's going to cause them more headache. It's going to be condemned or taken by the city, and they want nothing to do with it. So you've got two choices here. Let it go, right?
Yep.
Or and just tell them, hey, that, you know, no interest, right? I told you that I've got a buyer's list through disclosure, blah, blah, blah. Or pull the research on that specific zip code. See if there is any activity in there. If there is, you're going to have to go back with a big price reduction, and you're going to have to go to those buyers and say, what would you pay for this address in this particular spot?
That's probably the right question, exactly that. Just go ask them what they would pay and then go back with that.
I have a feeling that says, you know, price cures all, typically, not always. But
everything has
a
price.
Price cures most everything. So somebody may say, toughest part of town, you know, I'll give you $5,000 for it, or I'll give you $8,000 or whatever the case. And you've got to take that intel back to the buyer and say, hey, here's the reality. This is what I found out. Got it. You know, I can, here's where we're at. I've found a buyer that'll take it, but our price has to be, you know, $3,500, $6,000, you know, I'd still love to help you solve this problem, but.
And this is the money deal with the bare lot next to it.
Gotcha.
So
I'm
just like wanting to kind of just, I mean, I'll put some work into it just for experience, but I think this is one of those deals you just wipe your hands off and just move on to things that make sense.
If that's what your gut's telling you, I'm just saying what you could do. But you really don't want a lot in that neighborhood.
No.
You probably have a hard time giving it away.
Exactly. And it has a cost. You know, they're going to be paying taxes on it, paying whatever every year just to maintain and mow and clean and pick up trash.
And so nobody
it's
just, wants
it's a nuisance. It's exactly.
Yep.
So
yep.
I think it's just bad gone worse. So anyway, that's where I was at on that one there.
Cool.
My other one that's the goofy lot, that's the one the guy wasn't giving me any, wouldn't get me in the house. So that one there, come to find out, I did some research, went to the city, talked to him. That house is zoned as a two-unit duplex.
It is a two-unit or is it? We lost you there for
it
a
is.
Second. Or I did.
It,
okay.
It is a duplex. It is.
Okay.
And I think what it originally might have been is a like a mother-in-law apartment or something upstairs.
Okay.
Because there's a way to get a door to the back of the house to exit
okay.
and enter into the upper unit, and then the front door enters into the lower unit. But
okay.
there's a door that kind of opens up in there that it would have to be kind of reconverted back to a two-unit. So
gotcha.
I reran numbers, and that looks much better, actually being able to put two people in there.
Yeah.
It turns
what do you think,
more into
what do you think the numbers are?
The numbers, let me look at my thing here. So I have it under contract for 55.
Okay.
Wholesale for 65.
Okay.
If they put
how much work does it need?
If they put 35 into it, because it's a 2,100 square foot just to get it to a rental grade, they're going to have about 100 in it.
Yeah, that seems high, doesn't it? What kind of condition is it in? Is it totally beat up?
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Okay.
I'm gonna call it a full beater.
Okay.
Because they started working on it, and there's, you know, they've got some things tore out and some wall stripped and some ceiling stripped, and it's gonna be just easier just putting the number to it and letting somebody go in there at least knowing heads up. So the rents I think in that area per unit, I'm figuring gross rents for the whole house is about $1,500 a month.
Okay.
So about $750 per unit.
So $1,500.
Yeah, net rent
70% is $1,050.
$1,250
about $12,600 net. And then what do you think your buyers all in can be? $100?
About $100,000. Yeah, so it's about 12.6.
Yep. 12.6 cap. And what's the neighborhood grade?
The neighborhood's about a C. The house two doors up from it sold.
Uh-huh.
About a year ago for $182,000. But it was a scrape and build, and it's a pretty nice little house. So it at least has that going. That neighborhood is C plus to a B. There's some new stuff going on, but then there's some older stuff like this one mixed in it. So it's up and coming.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's
a C plus neighborhood.
No. But I figure the ARV is about $150,000.
Yeah. And somebody can be into it for $100,000?
Yeah.
A 12.6 cap and $50,000 equity?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I have talked to a couple of the buyers.
Yeah.
I've talked to a couple of the buyers. I'm trying to, like, go through and get really – I went through Go Section 8, talked to a bunch of people, actually went on Craigslist, talked to a bunch of people. One of the buyers basically likes smaller houses like that 6,000 square foot, so they're not putting – $20,000 into them, they can go in and do a quick flip and not have to tie up a bunch of capital in it. Haven't found anybody who's wanting that big of a project right this second, but I still have a lot of people to get a hold of.
Okay.
So
go back to list source. Pull your zip code or surrounding area. Actually, just start with the city and put it in duplexes or two units. And you can pull that data and map that data, too, and research that data.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, ListSource, I'm telling you guys, get to know ListSource a little bit. Just to know how to sort and look through that data, because you can go right to that list. Not everybody that wants single families will buy two units, but a decent number, if the numbers make sense. I mean, you can get two for the price of one right on site. You know, you send over your fix-up crew. You know, they tune the thing up. So all the usual places, but you can go right to ListSource and type in two units and see what kind of activity you have. You can start with the zip code if you want. You can look at the city. And when you get a list that you want to pull, grab it, map it, and then skip trace it.
Now, I did that with what I had pulled off of ListSource, so my original list. I went and pulled that zip code, and then I also went into FreedomSoft and put in the same zip code in the cache buyers.
Okay.
And I merged those two and actually have a list put together to actually have skip traced off of those two. But I'll go back and do the ListSource and update it as well, just so I know that I'm getting the right data.
Okay.
But I was able to get pretty good list out of FreedomSoft. And a lot of them are the same names that I had in my original list. A lot of the same people and businesses.
Right, okay.
So
right to the data.
Cool. Yeah.
So that thing looks even a little bit better.
It does. It actually looks better.
Yeah, it seems like it's pretty easy to turn back into a duplex, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't be a major stretch.
It off.
Just need somebody who's comfortable with that area. It's right up against the interstate. It's like on the end of a block. So but that whole neighborhood's going to have the noise. It doesn't matter. I mean, you're one house away, or if you're five houses away, it's going to be loud.
Right.
So it's just the demographics of that whole corner. And there's market activity in there. There's people doing flips. There's, you know, there's buy and hold, so it's a more of a mix. So I'm not too concerned. I think we can get that one done.
Did you ask the city if you can sell it as a single unit?
Have it rezoned.
Yeah, I'm just if it could be part of the story, then when you go sell it, you can say, hey, it's either or. What's your flavor?
Do you like
a bigger 2,000 square foot single family, or do you like a couple smaller units? I talk to the city, and it can be either or. You know, at least you know then, and you can talk to either buyer. So, cool.
Yeah. So that's been just a trying to get recalibrated on things. It's been a little slow for my sales guy. He made a bunch of calls, so I'm having another. I don't know if it's an issue, but when he's reaching out, making his first round of calls.
Yeah.
On my list, and I don't know, you might be able to help maybe clarify what kind of a, you know, it's 75% or so off of TLO, or not TLO, but LexisNexis. But his first round of calls, he's only making contact with about, let me look at the numbers here, but it's not a very high number on the first round. So I'm a little concerned about
What time of day is he calling?
He's starting 11, 12, into the afternoons.
Midday is going to be the worst. Before work or after are going to be best.
Yeah.
Or late.
Yeah.
Yep. If you're calling midday, that's going to be tough. So it could be the skip trace data, but it could also be time of call. So you got to mix around. You got to mix that up a little bit.
Okay.
See what happens.
And with your sales guys, I mean, is that how do you try to coach them, or how do you give them the direction? Do they start later and work later? I mean, what do you normally do if you need them working into the evening?
Yeah, I get calls frequently after 6 p.m. or text messages that they got another one. So, yeah, they're calling at night for sure, evenings, because that's when people are home.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just all there is to it. 11, 12, 1, 2, people are at work.
Yep.
So
yep.
Probably not going to pick up. So, yeah, you got to switch up call times for sure. That's what, I mean, for anybody that's in phone sales, that's the name of the game anyway. I mean, if you're calling, if you specifically have a list of people that that you're pretty sure are retired, daytime. Knock yourself out, but everybody else is going to be before work or after work. Yep.
Yeah.
So, yes, switch up time zones here this week and see what happens.
Okay. I'll do that. He was leaving some messages with the people trying to get him to call him back, and I had told him this earlier, just don't get too carried away. Just tell him, you know, call by their first name, you know.
Hey, John, not just too carried away. You want a script.
Yeah.
You got to have a script for that.
just leaving the message for the voicemail. I remember you had told me just to have him leave a – just talk to him and, like, you know him, hey, John, this is Mike.
Yeah, no last names,
got some
no
important,
company
got
names.
Got some important information about your house on whatever address, and call me back,
or
please.
Hey, Mike, my name's Mike. I'm just calling to chat quick about a vacant property. Looks like you own it, 123 Main Street. Give me a call when you get this.
Yeah.
I mean, we sound like friends. Important information is, I don't think I said that one. I maybe said that I've got a couple questions for you about a property you own at 123 Main Street. I've got a couple quick questions. It kind of gets the curiosity thing going, but always use the word hey. Never use last names. Never use a company name. Just sound like, hey, it's Mike. Like, right, we know each other.
Yeah. And that's what I told him today.
Yeah.
And another thing I told him that's going to help with is when you're calling people that you might not even have the correct number, that if you're calling and, like, you're reaching out to somebody and you're telling me you have important information, they're going to be more likely to respond back to you saying, hey, this is not – you're not reaching the right person, instead of just letting it go and you keep calling that number multiple times trying to get a hold of the wrong person to begin with. So that might even help convert that number to a dead line. That's the wrong person. I've called a bunch myself, and people are like, I've never heard of that person. I don't know how you got my number.
Right.
You know, so if somebody's getting a call that's important information and it's not the right person, they're going to be more likely to, if they're not the salesperson, they're probably just going to just, not even respond.
Sound non-salesy. So, there isn't really it's not always black and white. There isn't a perfect script, but, keep track of what messages are being left and what you and your team think works, and then adjust accordingly. Yeah. You've got to have a message for if you think you have the right person, but they didn't answer, or if you know you have a family member or a friend or something like that through the skip trace and you're trying to get a hold of them.
That's been just part of the trying to convert more of these calls. He made like 45 calls today to talk to 9 people, and nothing turned into any kind of offers. I kind of went through and re-categorized how we're going to respond to the people, because we've been trying to make offers and chasing these people that are pretty low motivation. I told them, I said, we got a high motivation, medium, and low. High and medium, we're going to try to find out and get to a point where they want to hear an offer. I said, the guys that are low, I'm sorry?
Is your sales guy using FreedomSoft? Do you have those calls recorded that you can listen to, or no?
I've got him. He's going to start using it, but he wanted to get in there and try to figure it out first, so I haven't. He hasn't yet. I've got it set up.
Get him on that as soon as possible. My thought is, if he talked to 9 people and got skunked, that there's something that you could adjust just by listening to the call. That's my guess.
Okay.
Can't prove it, but that's the problem. We can't prove it.
Okay.
Or we don't know because it's not being recorded. So, that's a killer tool. It's a killer tool. So
I told him on the guys that are just asking you, they're telling you, well, I'm not going to take a low offer, and they're already just kind of up front and just saying, they're not very motivated. I said, that's fine. I said, don't be too pushy with them. And if they're not motivated, they're not motivated. Let's not try to turn an offer into something. If they're telling you they're not going to hear anything that's low, if you can't get them to respond, those ones I had told you before when we had given us just kind of bits and pieces of information, won't give us enough. They won't help us make an offer. Obviously, they're not motivated. If they're just looking for a number, then they're probably not a viable option anyway. So I said, those ones there, we can put them on a callback in, I said 42 days, just so it's an even day of the week. If they call them on a Thursday, you'll call them back on a Thursday at the same time. So they have a better chance you're going to get a hold of them and just check up with them again then. For a low motivated guy, for the ones that are just playing up saying, you got a hold of them, I'm not interested in selling at this point, I says, let's put them on about a 60-day cycle I put an auto a workflow automation that will give them a reminder in 60 days on those, because you did get a hold of them and they're just not interested in selling this time. And we'll touch base.
Here's what you want to know, Mike, and then let me see who else is on. And if you have more, we'll try and get them at the end. But here's what you, here's why you got to have the calls recorded. Is the person on the other end, the seller, just saying, yeah, not really interested in selling, and your acquisitions person is folding up? I'm not saying yours is, but this is why you have to have a salesperson. So wait a minute, you know, how long has this thing been vacant? And they're digging for the pain, right? And they're asking them. So you're just, you know, it's been sitting there for 2 years, you're just content to pay the property taxes on it and basically have another expense in your life. And they start asking these questions, massaging the pain a little bit. The thing is that you don't, without having the calls recorded, you don't know what's going on. Salesperson saying, yeah, these nine weren't motivated. And at this point, you just have to take their word for it. So
yep.
This is for you and everybody else. Get them on FreedomSoft. If you're not going to record calls through FreedomSoft, use another service that's going to record the calls so that you can go back and listen in and do training, so that when your acquisitions person says, yeah, I spoke to nine, nobody's interested, you can go in and see if they're just giving up. Because a salesperson will, as soon as they get that first wall gets put up by the seller, they're going to ask six more questions and try and find the pain. Because vacant real estate costs money, period.
Yeah.
So somebody's not interested, yeah, I kind of figured you wouldn't be. Just curious, how long is this place been sitting vacant for? Oh, no kidding. How much are the property taxes on that thing? $300-$500 a year? So, yep. Oh, cool. You know, what was your intent? And they're going beyond the first no, which is why we put a high D phone salesperson on the phone. So good stuff, man. Let me see who else is on. And then if we have time at the end and you have more questions, let's jump back in.
Yep.
Who else is on? Got questions or updates? Don't be quiet on me on a Monday.
Hey, Mike, it's Mike.
Hey. You're a little bit quiet. Let me turn my speaker up. What's going on?
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
way better. Thank you.
I've kind of been out of the loop for a little bit. I had a major crash of all my whole computer system, and I didn't have any paper notes on where to find you guys, and so I was trying to remember all my links to get back on.
Yeah.
So I've kind of been out of touch. And one of the things, what's the link to go in? I know there's a dumb question, but where's the link to go in and put in our weekly report and all that stuff?
Yeah, so it's in the coaching center. Did you find your login and password for that?
No.
RealAmericanWealthCoaching.com.
Real American.
Yeah, so do this, Mike. If you in there, over on the left-hand side, it just says weekly update, and you click it to put in on Fridays. So
okay.
the coaching email, successteam@realamericanwealth.com, go through what you have and then let me know what you don't have, because I can look that stuff up in the system and then get it back to you. So get me an email tonight with what you are needing, and let's get you back in.
Well, and I found some of it. I mean, I've got back into FreedomSoft.
Okay.
I found my stuff in there, and I found
gotcha.
I found some of it. So I'll go in and see if I'm missing anything else. But yeah, and I just got to get everything back up and ramped up and going.
Okay.
So
yeah, I want to in light of what happened, give me an update where you left off, where things are at, any questions, what you should be doing next, whatever. Get me an email as soon as possible so that we can move on. And this is, you know, something happens. I tell everybody on orientation calls, something is right. Just expect something to happen, whether it's a family something, a work something, you had a technology something. I'm telling you, this is just how life works. So
life happens. Yep.
Yep. Let's figure out where you were. So get me an email with what you still need, and then let me know where you were when everything crashed. And then I'll tell you very specific next steps so we can pick back up.
Sounds good.
Sound good?
All right, that'll work.
All right, Mike. Yep. Glad you found the number to chime in. So,
yeah, thanks.
Yep. Bye. All right, who else?
Hey, Mike, this is Felipe. How's it going?
Good, Felipe. How are you?
Pretty good. So back to the whole spreadsheet deal that me and Gary have been working on. When we go to realtor.com and we go to property type, there ain't no thing to click on the single family home. All we have is multifamily, land, house, condo.
House.
So just click on the house.
I sent that back in an email, and I don't know if you guys are working out of the same email or not. And I don't remember which one of you asked it, but yes, SFR is single family residence, which is a house, just a single unit property. Yep.
And I did do the within the 20 mile radius on that also for the New Orleans one that you had commented on.
Okay.
I don't know if you got the one that we sent you back, if it looked okay or the numbers looked all right. I'm still having a hard time with the MSA and the population of the city. But I think we can get through it.
The latest version was off, too. I looked at Chicago, and it had a zero P ratio, and your activity number for the last 90 days was 176,000 transactions. And that number in list source is off. So you had city population, and then you had the active listings from Realtor for just the city with no expansion. That was correct. But then your list source actual activity number should have been for the last 90 days when I pulled Chicago was 1,234, and you guys had 176,000 in there. And 176,000, when you pick Chicago, that's the first number that registers in list source. But then you have to select single family homes, just like the video says.
Right.
And then you have to select the last 90 days, and then on the last screen, you hit that you click that little button to include corporations, because a lot of times investors will buy in a corporate name, and then it bumps up.
Yeah, so
it was actually 1234.
Okay, so on the corporate-owned properties, you put no preference, correct?
Correct, no preference. So what had happened was
whoever
did list source for Chicago on the new spreadsheet, you put in city, selected Illinois, Chicago, and then use that number. You didn't use any of the other filters because I saw the 176,000 as well. So we still got it.
Yeah, I think that's where I messed up.
Yep. Try it one more time and make sure that you're in alignment. And
okay.
It really, like that email says, if you're going to pull city, that's fine. Just make sure you pull city population. You pull city data in realtor.com, which means you do not add the 20-mile expansion. And then you pull city and list source, where you select city for geography. If you're going to do MSA, right, use the MSA population.
Right.
So you just do a Google search for it. Go to realtor.com. You're still going to search the city, but then you click to add that 20-mile expansion. It's not perfect, but it's good enough to get the MSA. And then you go into list source, and in the geography dropdown, you select MSA. So it doesn't matter which you're doing. Just make sure that your three data points are congruent. Make sense?
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Mike.
Yeah. Anytime. Here's what I want you to do in Chicago. First, analyze just the city, and then do the Chicago MSA and put them on the same spreadsheet.
Okay.
Because here's what it'll tell you. Look at the P ratios for both. They may be the same, but they'll likely be different. And it'll tell you, if we're going to pick Chicago, should we just focus on the city of Chicago? Or should we expand our marketing efforts to the MSA? You'll be able to make a more intelligent decision on where you should go.
Okay.
And I'll be honest, I don't know the answer to it. I don't know what's better, just in the city or in the whole MSA. I know there's activity all over, so... I mean, Chicago is such a major anchor that the surrounding areas are going to have a ton of – I think the MSA is over 9 million people, like 9.5 million people, something like that. So it's a huge area. But, yeah, you'll be able to tell.
All right, Mike.
My guess is when you start talking to buyers, you're going to work the MSA. That would be my guess. But
right.
Yep.
Okay, that's what I wanted to clarify.
One more time. try it one more time and make sure your data lines up with however you're pulling it. All right? And then when you guys sent that email over, I responded to Gary, and it had the email, it had the spreadsheet attached and said, where should we go? What I want you guys to do is send me the spreadsheet and you tell me where you've chosen, right? Think it through and say, based on the data we found, we want to go here. And then I will either say, yep, that seems like a sound choice, or I'll say, consider these other few factors. But I want, it's not in this program, it's never, hey, Mike, what should we do? It's, here's what we've decided. Give me your feedback on that decision, especially with something like this. So you guys go through, put your heads together and say, based on what we found, here's where we want to go and why. And then tell me what you came up with, and then I'll give you a response. Sound good?
Sounds good to me, buddy.
It is. Beautiful. Good stuff.
All righty, Mr. Mike. Well, I'm signing off now, and I will talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
All right. Okay, bye-bye.
Well, see ya. See ya. Who else?
I'm Mike. This is Sherry.
Hi, Sherry. How are you?
Good. So I've been through module one, except for I did all the homework, but the I don't have office after set up for that, and then I can punch in the numbers.
Yep.
And they started module two, and of course, you know, I'm going to need my office. But I do have a question for you when we are trying to decide our, you know, where we want to go and look for homes. And maybe I'm not far enough to know this, but I mean, should we have something where we're looking at the crime rate or the economy in that particular city?
My short answer is, if Rob felt like it was needed, it would be a part of the process. So for that, I'm going to tell you no. And here's really, if the city has activity currently in the last 90 days, it's kind of an indicator of the economy, at least from an investment, real estate investment standpoint about it. Here's the other thing I'll tell you about crime rate. I'm with you on that one, except that I'm buying and selling in St. Louis, and it's the murder capital of the United States per capita. And so that's, you know, somebody finds that out, and they say, holy cow, I don't want to go to St. Louis. Well, there's all kinds of investor activity in St. Louis. What you'll typically find, I mean, like in Chicago, everybody knows, I think Chicago leads a number of murders. St. Louis is the highest per 100,000 population. So both cities have some areas where there's no investor activity. I mean, it's legit war zone. There is no buying and selling that's going on really. Right. But then you get outside of that, like any big city. I mean, Chicago has $20 million property. So it has everything in between, and St. Louis is no different. You know, St. Louis has expensive real estate, and St. Louis has legitimate war zones. So, you know, do you look at it and say, holy cow, the murder capital of the United States, I don't want to go there? Well, no, because if you pull list source data, there's activity all over the place. Just not
– Yeah, I grew up around
not in
Oakland,
a really bad spot.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
If
so you get
Oakland Hills, you're pretty safe.
Yeah.
And you have beautiful homes up there, but okay.
So what happens is you're going to go to, you know, through the steps there in the modules, you're going to go to list source and you're going to buy a list that's going to show you where all the absentee owner, the investor transactions are happening. And if you were to go, for instance, to Chicago, there would be no activity in the legitimate war zones. And in the neighborhoods that investors like, there would be boatloads. So, yeah, I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yep.
Okay.
Wouldn't worry about it. We're strictly going off our investors buying here in the recent past, yes or no, and what does that look like? So.
Okay.
Yep. Good question. Yeah, so one of the biggest challenges investors have is they look at a property and say, ooh, I don't think I'd live there. I don't like this area, right? And we're people, so our preferences and our biases get pulled into this thing. And, you know, Rob does this more naturally than some because he's an engineer by, you know, that's just what he's wired to be. That's the major that he chose in college. And he just likes the numbers. And so this this method that he put together is very much, if the data says go there, we go. If the data says don't, we don't. And we don't need to add opinions. We just look at the data. It's really hard to not do. I've been around it for a long time, so it's a little easier for me now. But if data says go there, then we go. I don't care what the place looks like. I don't care what my preferences are, any of that stuff. If we have investor activity there, then it's open season.
Okay.
So, yeah, good question. And then yep, you've got a little bit of a tech thing too. So like I said in that email, you're going to have Office, because you want all these downloads for as long as you call yourself
right.
real estate investor. You're going to want to have them.
Right.
So,
okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I went ahead and did the homework anyway. I thought,
okay.
Yeah,
cool.
And then,
yep, I'm glad you did that.
Yeah.
Just keep working through it. Yep. Yeah, so get that on your machine as soon as possible, and get you just heard me talking to Felipe there about the spreadsheet you're going to fill out for different markets.
Right.
It's really valuable, because the thing about market selection, you guys, once you get moving, you're going to be evaluating deals on a weekly and hopefully a daily basis. You're not going to evaluate
mm-hmm.
markets that frequently, right? You'll get a first one moving, then, you know, depending on maybe 3 months down the road, 6 months down the road, you say, hey, I think we want to add in a second. But you're not going to be doing it daily. And so, you know, really, I want you to get through that market selection stuff quickly, but I also want you to understand what's going on so that you can, you know, go back to that at a future point in time.
Okay.
So, any other questions so far?
For me, I don't think so. It's been very interesting. I really enjoyed working through the research on the list and realtor.com and all of that. I think I researched about 10 different cities.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, if you pop the page, do 10 more. And what it comes to is I want you to get to a place where you can research a city and pull data on it off the top of your head. It'll be on the news. And you'll say, something on TV, and they'll say, oh, you know, Virginia's booming, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, somewhere.
Yeah. You're kind of breaking up a bit.
I am? I don't know.
Yeah, you're better.
Yeah, you were breaking up.
Yeah, I'm on a cell phone. I always call in on a cell phone, so hopefully you can hear me okay.
It's better now.
Now. I was just saying, you know, I want you to get really familiar with that, because you'll be watching the news or see a headline about some city and it's real estate related, and you think, hey, I wonder what the P ratio is down there. And, you know, jump online and check it out. See what's going on.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, I really enjoyed actually doing that. I just wanted to get really familiar with it, so I just kept researching.
Here's what's pretty interesting is Rob read an article years ago after he had come up with this P ratio math. I think it was on Forbes or something, and they said top 10 U.S. cities for real estate investment. And he ran P ratios on all 10, and he wouldn't have picked any of them. But that was the mainstream news. Not a single one was in the sweet spot. Because the news is typically late. It's typically late, right? They're going to say, oh, Denver's on the map. Go buy in Denver. Denver's P ratio is super low, right? The opportunity here was back in 2008, you know, when prices were, you know, half of what they are today.
Right.
And in a lot of cases, less than half. So, yeah, pretty interesting. But it's a stat that you want to get familiar with. So. Anything else, Sherry? From the first two modules there?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think I've watched two videos twice. I just felt like I needed to. I think I'm okay right now. I just have to get the office, unfortunately, you know, on my computer, and then I can start plugging in numbers. And once I do that, then I probably will have questions.
Okay. How quick can you get it on there? You can either – if you go online and search it, you can probably buy it from Microsoft and download it, or get over to your local Best Buy or software shop.
Yeah, I'm going to research it tonight to see what the best option is for me. So probably by tomorrow.
Beautiful.
I can have it and then start plugging in the numbers. And then because I've already listened to both videos from Module 2, then I want to download that spreadsheet and then start plugging in those numbers this week too.
Okay, perfect. Sounds good. Who else? Somebody has another question. I know it.
I guess I'll have another question here.
Yeah, have one.
After I pick my cities and, you know, plug in the numbers, I mean, I'm assuming you're going to review that and then, you know, just kind of talk with me about those selections, if that's a good move or not a good move, kind of walk me through that.
Yeah, just like I told Felipe, is don't send over a spreadsheet and say, where should I go? Send over a spreadsheet and says that says, I want to go here based on, you know, here's what I found. And then, I'll typically double check your numbers quick and then see what else is in there. So, Sherry, here's what else I want you to throw in the mix and take into consideration. And this is an important factor, is that average single-family home price. So I think I was talking about it last week on Thursday, but if you were to run Denver right now and it had a P ratio of 12.5, which would be right in the sweet spot and on the better end of the sweet spot, right? So the sweet spot for the P ratio is 5 to 14. The lower the number gets, the more competitive the market is. The higher the number gets, the more it's oversaturated with deals. So if you had two deals in the sweet spot, one was a 5, just based on P ratio, what would be the better selection?
Okay, so you're asking me what would be a better selection between which numbers?
A 5 and a 14. Or let me ask you this. Which market would it be easier to find deals in? Two cities. One's a 5, one's a 14.
Well, I think you said if there was 5, it is more saturated, right?
No, 5 is more competitive. The higher
the
number is,
right.
Yep, the more there's a surplus of available deals or properties.
Well, I think competitive market, I think that could be good both ways. I'm not sure if I'd want to go with a 5. I mean, to be honest, I want to go maybe a little higher up.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It's not as high. I mean, it's not as hard. I don't want to spend more money and be competitive and waste my money, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would take the 14 over the 5 because it means that there are more deals readily available, and it's not so hyper-competitive, right?
Yes.
So then let me ask you this. So, okay, so let's say you have two cities and they're both a 12.5, which is a great number for a P ratio. And where would it be easier to get in the middle of deals and to get them sold? In one city, the average single-family home price is $125,000, and in the other city, the average single-family home price is $375,000. Which of those two do you like?
I like the 125. I don't know.
Absolutely.
But then you're going to make.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Because more investors can afford cheaper investment properties, right?
Yes.
So this is what I was saying on Thursday. I mean, if you were to run Denver's P ratio now, it would be low. But even if you ran it, it was a 10, which would be good, which means there's a good mix of deals and you know, buyer activity, the average single-family home price in Denver is $487,000.
Right.
$487,000. So, I mean, I would look at that P ratio and say, hey, that's spot on, but that's not the whole picture. I want to go somewhere where it's, you know, 100 quarter average home price,
right.
150, 175, right? I like below 200. But you can have a single-family home price higher than that, right? But
right.
If I'm picking them, yeah. If there's a lot of activity and I have inexpensive investor deals, because, again, we're playing the percentages, right? If you have,
mm-hmm,
you know,
exactly.
If you have 20 buyers, I mean, you know, what are the chances that all for a $40,000 investment property, and then what are the odds that they can own the 300,000 property? Well, the chances are one at 30 to 60. So, you know, that's why we pull this data together. Let me know what you find. Let me know what you pick. And that, you know, there isn't a. It's just something we'll talk through. Here's all that said. Here's what I'll tell you. This method works in all kinds of markets. If you were to pull St. Louis, where I'm working, the P ratio is low. It's not a sweet spot. And we're getting a lot of deals there because this method works. I'm just saying, we went for some other reasons, right? My business partner got married last summer. His wife's from St. Louis. He's out there 3 times a year. He loved the city. But, you know, they were driving around, and he's like, Mike, I think we can make some money here. There's a lot going on. And we said, all right, let's give it a shot. So, I mean, I do this all scientifically.
You're you cutting out again. That.
Okay. Am I back?
Sorry. You're back. You're back.
Okay. I was just saying, St. Louis, where I'm at, one of my cities, has a low P ratio, and we're finding a bunch of deals there. So this method works. But, you know, find a city in the sweet spot. That's all I was saying. This method that we're going to do, that you're going to go through, works. Works to find deals and get them tied up.
Okay.
Yep. Anything else, Sherry? Good question.
I think I'm okay right now.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Who else?
Mike?
Yeah.
This is Gary. I'm not at home and I don't have my notes, but one question that I wanted to ask is, when I was looking at Freedom South, Rob was talking about once you purchase that list, it takes you to all the vacant houses. Is that correct?
The tool in FreedomSoft, the vacant houses tool under the marketing tab?
Yes.
Is that what you're asking about? It does, yeah. We get a monthly data feed from the U.S. Postal Service.
I guess my question is, why do we need bird dogs then?
Great question. Because field leads will be better than the leads on that list.
Say that again?
Your field leads from a bird dog will be better than the leads on that list. That's why, because you actually have somebody putting eyes on the vacant property.
I see.
Yep, you're going to have some that the post office says are vacant that won't be, that'll be occupied for whatever it is, however they figure it out. It's not a perfect system. And so the way we use it is, it's a great plan B. So I always pull a list or two from that feature and skip trace it and have it on standby. And then I tell my acquisitions people, field leads first. And if you run out of people to call there, you can dip into this U.S. Postal Service list until we have more field leads coming in. So we use it as a solid plan B, but field leads convert at the highest rate. They're still the best.
I see.
So, good question. Yep.
Thanks. Another thing, I was listening to Rob on there that he said, when one of the examples that he had, I think it was 889 properties, and he talked about sending postcards to all those people. Is that why? Is that the reason he sent those? Because he's working on a high-end market. Is that why you send postcards?
Yeah, there's a fork in the road in the coaching center based on if you pick a low price market or a high price.
Right.
If you pick a low market, we don't talk about direct mail. If you pick a high price market, there are training videos in there on how to buy a list and send direct mail. Because if you drive around those trendier higher price markets, the vacant properties are fewer and farther between.
Right? I see.
And so, yep. And the cutoff is, again, it's not black and white, but it's somewhere between 200 and 250,000 where we think, if you look up average single family home price, where we think it goes from low price to high price, somewhere in there.
Okay.
2.25, 250. Yep.
Okay.
My preference is that you pick a lower price market where you can run vacants and have a bird dog go pulling vacant leads because they're productive. That's all there is to it.
That sounds good to me.
Yep.
I got on a little late. Was Felipe on?
Or he was.
He was. He asked some questions. Okay, I'll talk to him tonight.
He
so.
Did. Yep. Yep. We talked through, and then he said he had to run, so he jumped off.
Okay.
Yep. Talked to him a few minutes ago.
Oh, good. Good. Good.
Yes, sir. Anything else, Gary?
Not right now. Like I said, I'm not home. I don't have my notes, but when I get home, I'll send you some. But I guess you send the spreadsheet back to us, and I haven't. Did you send that back?
I talked to Felipe about it. So there were still a couple on there. I double-checked Chicago, and the numbers are still off. So I coached him through that again. He's going to send it over one more time.
Okay. Awesome. Yep. Okay, I'll talk to him later.
That sounds good. Anything else, Gary?
No, not right now, Mike. Thanks.
Okay. Yep, you're welcome. Who else? Hey, so I just got to share this because I was excited about it on Friday when it happened. This was after our call, but our acquisitions team on Friday, one of them's not going to go, but they put 20, we had 26 verbal offers accepted on properties.
Wow.
Today. Yeah, super wow. There was a 27th that we looked at today that's not going to go, but yeah, man, that was, I'll be honest, that was beyond what the kind of movement I even thought we could pull off. So I'm kind of passing it on as a motivator.
Congrats.
yeah, you know, I'll tell you what it does is I'm really excited about it, and I started thinking, holy crap, we got a lot of houses to sell, right? And so I have those fears just like everybody else does, and what if we don't get it done, and what if I let my team down, and this, that, and the other, and I was talking to my wife this morning. I'm like, God, I got to get over this, right? I'm letting fear dominate. We got to let faith dominate that we're just going to make this happen and pull it off. And, you know, so got after it today, got to work, jumped on the phone. But, yeah, it was pretty fun. I don't think – I was talking to Rob about it. They haven't had a 26 contract day in Memphis. And so, you know, Paul and I were high-fiving the team. Just to give you a glimpse of, you know, we haven't even hit our, we certainly haven't maximized potential yet at this point. But what's cool about this, you know, this business can be whatever you want it or need it to be, right? If a couple deals a month is what you're after, fantastic. You know, go build that and let it be that. If you want to do 10 a month, 20 a month, 40 a month, it can be that as well. And I'm doing this all, I'm going to bring on, I'm having coffee with her tomorrow, a transaction coordinator. She gets paid $300 a file when it closes, but she's going to help us just manage all the title and that kind of thing. She'll be a contract employee. But we're doing this right now with two acquisitions guys. There's really only one guy full-time on the phone, and Chris is kind of overseeing that. Helping him run numbers, helping the other guy run numbers, you know, put deals together, that kind of thing. So just two of us, two acquisitions people, Paul and myself. I mean, that's all we have in place. And we have the 24 are scheduled to come back today at some point this evening, and I think that'll put us at like 31 houses under contract. We closed one of them today, and the pipeline is just, filling up. So anyway, I want to share
awesome.
It as more of a, yeah, it was kind of fun to see it happen. And, just the fact that I, the business can be what people want it to be, which is why real estate's cool. Even if you're saying, I don't ever want to move at that kind of volume, 2 to 4 a month and I'm good, it can be that. Some of you I know are shooting for some bigger numbers, and it can be that too, and anything in between. So fun business we're in.
Mike, this is Gary again. Now that you're talking about all those properties, at what point or can we, too many of us be in one city? Is it, are we saturating one area if everybody gets on there, or how does that work?
Yeah, I wouldn't even stress it. I don't know that we have a little bit of overlap, I think, in a couple markets, but we don't have 3 students in a market, so I wouldn't even worry about it.
Okay.
Rob has always taught and felt that he's been telling people this for almost 20 years, but don't see anybody else as competition. See other investors as people you can buy from, sell to, or partner with. And we just really believe that, we believe in abundance. There's enough to go around. And I wouldn't even sweat it. Actually,
okay.
When you tap in and find other competent investors in your market, just go make money with them. Just see them that way. I mean, the deal that we sold, we sold a $17,000 assignment fee today, and the other investor is super competent. He's generating leads as well. We got paid. We sold him a house that he's going to flip and make money on. Everybody wins. We don't view the world through competition. Yeah. We view it as, hey, we're legit. You're legit. Great. Let's go make money together.
Awesome.
So, yep.
Good answer. Thanks.
Yeah, that's the way to see the world.
Yeah. Yep.
There's plenty to go around. I mean, there are just millions and millions and millions and millions of houses in this country. There's going to be a ton today, there are a ton tomorrow, a ton the next day. There's always plenty of people to talk to. And then what we teach, this whole method, I mean, let's say that you felt like you tapped out a city. Man, we've wrung every deal we possibly can out of this. I mean, the whole point of it is, hey, let's analyze another one. Let's go generate leads there. Same script. I know the process. So, I mean, the United States is your playground, right?
Right.
I mean, it'll take you the longest amount of time to launch your first market. From there, for you to choose a market, hire a bird dog, and have leads coming in inside of a week, that'll just be something that you'll know how to do. So, if we're in St. Louis and we say, man, maybe it's a couple years down the road, and hey, when we started, we were pulling deals on a weekly basis. Now we're beating our head against the wall. If Paul and I decide to leave and say, let's not do that anymore, we'll have leads moving somewhere else, inside of 5 days. So I'm not worried about that at all. So it's a great question, and it's one that everybody, either they ask it or they're at least thinking it. So, Gary, I appreciate you asking, but, yeah, don't even sweat it.
Okie dokie. Yep. And how many cities would you recommend that we start off with? One. Two, three?
Yep.
One?
I want you to get moving in one.
Okay.
If you're up and running and you're in the middle of leads and you maybe you want to bring in another acquisitions person or something like that, you want to go generate markets elsewhere, and you've got some systems in place to handle it, I'm all for it. But right now, I want you to focus on one. Because when you go through the process with one, I like to kind of say it like, let's go slow. And I don't like the word slow because I want us all to move fast, right? But let's go slower now so that you can move fast with opening new markets for, the rest of your career as an investor. So let's learn it the first time, go through the process, make sure you understand it. And what that'll do is it'll add speed moving forward for every additional market that you want to launch.
Okie dokie.
Yes, sir. Good questions. What else?
I don't have any others, I don't think. Every time you you talk about something, something comes to mind. So maybe I'll go up with another one.
That's what this is for.
Okay.
You know, that's the whole idea, is that maybe you come on with one question or none, and then, you know, start jumping into the conversation. So that's perfect.
There you go.
Hey, Clark, I think you jumped on. Are you with us?
Okay. Yeah, we're here.
Tell me. Yeah, Clark sent me an email. He's been battling a little bit, getting a acquisitions person. And so, you know, Clark, we can continue the conversation if we need to, but just tell me what you have in place, how many people you've talked to, and how those conversations are going, because you're not the only one who either is or will deal with this. So.
Well, you know, looking for somebody in sales, I got some, probably 10 or maybe a dozen responses.
Okay.
And probably half of those, just by the nature of their responses, I wouldn't call back. They've just had it weak. And probably six or seven of them, I asked them to take the DISC test.
Okay.
And they all kind of balked at that. I got no responses except one. And he took it. He said he was a high D, so I called him back several times. He just hasn't come back to me.
Okay.
So I'm just not having any luck.
Here's what I want you to do is, I haven't seen your ad. Send me an email to Success Team, to the coaching email, and ask for my ad. Because what I did was, and I've shared this with quite a few people, and I told anybody, if you send me an email, I'm happy to reply back with what I post. Now, you have to switch it up, because I currently have this ad running on Craigslist, so don't copy it word for word, but use the format, change up the wording, right, make it different so Craigslist doesn't pull them both down. But I'll send you my ad, and here's what you want to do is, you want to write your ad from the standpoint of the person that you're looking to hire. And so just to be really quick on this, high D personality types, they don't ask a lot of questions. They're really direct. They like as few words as possible, and they just want to know the facts. Okay, so this ad that I put together, I'm not high D, but Rob is, and Paul is my business partner, so I know how those guys think. And so when I went to write this ad, I said, okay, I'm going to get right to the point, and I'm going to use as few words as possible so that when a high D personality reads this, they're going to like it, and it's going to agree with who they are, all right? And so part of it is, we just have to get smart in hiring. Now, if you're looking for a transaction coordinator, somebody that is C and S, somebody that's going to ask a lot of questions, they want to be really comfortable with what they're doing before they ever start or agree to work with you or your company, you can't write an ad like this. They'll read it and they'll be completely disgusted, and they'll think, or not disgusted, but they'll say, this job isn't for me. There are way too many questions left on the table. And so that ad needs to be longer and more drawn out. Here's what your day looks like. Here's what the expectations look like. Here's what you'll be doing, right, on a day-to-day basis. Here's why, bam, bam, bam. You got to write it to fit their personality. And so I'm hoping, Clark, that shoot me that email, and I will respond to it. I'll just copy and paste the ad that I use, and then you can switch it up. And hopefully that will weed out some of these non-high D people, because if you have an S or a C read it, they won't be interested. It's way too short and to the point.
Well, Mike, you might recall, I've already done that. You sent me your ad. And I did mix it up. I thought I did a pretty good job.
Okay.
I made it concise. I made it kind of exciting, and I got an initial response. Bang! But like I said, these guys they don't follow through with my trying to get back to them and get into a conversation.
So post it again. Right. The keyword here is until. We're gonna keep talking to people until we find one that's gonna work. So how many times did you post it? Once or multiple?
I just posted it once. Just once.
Okay.
I'm gonna repost it. Yeah, I'm about to repost it.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got to repost it after 4 days if you're not getting any traction to it. And then how many did you actually have a conversation with?
Four of them, about four or five.
Okay, and how did the conversation go? What did they ask? How did those go?
Let me think. The last guy, he wanted to know how much he was going to get paid.
Okay.
And he wanted to know
And what was your answer?
I don't know. I told him right now it's just commission only, but I hope to grow fast. And he just, you know, when I broke it down to him how much a commission would be, you know, starting out maybe 2-3 deals a week, 20% after overhead, and he put it together fast in his head and just hung up, said goodbye. Unfortunately, where I'm living, it's kind of a lot of money around here, and I think salespeople are used to making a lot more than I can offer them right now.
20% on $5,000 to $10,000 sales, it's not 20% minus overhead. It's 20% to them.
Yeah, wasn't there a discussion you had where maybe it was Rob on the phone one day? He said he takes care of the person that was left. He takes the 20% out of that. I kind of recall that conversation. But in any case, it wasn't enough for this guy. And,
you said 2-3 deals a week or a month?
Well, I mean, I said a week. I mean, that's wishful thinking at this point. But
yeah,
I mean, it could happen quickly. I've got the leads.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, average deal $7,000 times three a month. You know, $20,000.
Twenty
20% of that, $4,000 on a couple a month, which is really doable. You know, here's the thing. If they just hung up, they obviously didn't like your answer, but maybe they weren't clear on what was going on. Say, you know, we're going to average about $7,000 transactions. If you're hitting goals, I can pay up to 20% of that. Paid at closing. So here's the thing, right? Posted the ad once, had 4 conversations. You just got to have more conversations. It's going to take more than that to weed through it.
Okay,
so,
I gotta post it again. Yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, if that ad loses traction, you gotta repost it after 4 days if you're not getting any responses to it.
Okay.
And yeah, have that initial conversation. Say, hey, we give everybody a disc test. This is just how it works. We want to make sure that there's a good fit personality-wise. So I'm gonna send you a link. It's gonna take you 15 minutes. When can you fill this out and get it back to me? Right. And if they're not willing to do it, that's fine. Talk to somebody else. What you want them to do is don't ask them what their profile was. Have them email it back over to you. Because when they take the free disc test, they can grab that and download it. So have them send it back over. But, yeah, this is just a matter of more conversation. And I'll tell you guys, we're at 2 acquisitions people. We're trying to hire a third, but we've been trying to hire a third for a month and a half. And we haven't found the right person yet. So we just keep posting the ad, keep refreshing it. Keep talking to people, and eventually we'll find somebody. But I deal with the same stuff you do.
Yeah.
That's just all there is to it. You know, we've been looking for a third for a while. So I got the first 2 fairly quick, but now this one is stalled out. We can't find anybody. Sometimes, like you said, Clark, they just flake out. They don't call back. They're not a good fit, personality type. Yeah, that's part of it. So we just keep looking.
Okay. I got an additional question kind of about this, too.
Yeah.
You said you have somebody on the phone full time.
Yep.
At what point do you and your partner take over for the second conversation or third conversation or whatever? I mean, who runs the numbers by them? Is it the sales guy or is it you?
Yeah, it's us initially, but now it's the sales guy. I keep training them, and the goal is for them to go straight to offer. And I'm very clear with them. I say, listen, if you screw this thing up and tie up a deal for $50,000 that we can only pay 20 for, I was like, don't sweat it. We have an inspection period that goes out until 9 days prior to closing. So it's basically a 21-day inspection. That's on the contract. And I said, if we need to renegotiate price, that's what we'll do. So here's how we run the numbers. You're not going to be perfect at first. But if this person is ready to hear an offer, I want you going to numbers on it. So that doesn't happen usually in the first week or two, but certainly inside of the first couple months, your acquisitions people can be going straight to offer on the phone calls.
Okay.
So, yeah, originally they set up Paul himself.
I lost you, Mike. You're cutting out.
I just said, am I back?
Yeah, there you are.
I just said originally they're setting up a follow-up conversation with Paul or myself.
Okay, so you do talk to the owner. You or Paul.
We do it first, yep. And we want I want those to be three-way phone calls with my acquisitions person so they can hear that conversation and how it sounds.
Okay, all good stuff here.
Anything else?
Not initially right now, no, thanks.
Okay, yep. Who else? Got about 10 minutes here. Good questions tonight. Good questions every night, though. Always. Anybody else? Any questions on what we've discussed so far? No?
Oh, you know what I do? Mark the Clark again.
Yeah, fire.
At what point in the initial conversation do you, or do you at all, reveal the fact that you're a wholesaler? You're gonna pass the on to a different buyer, because initially it's like we buy houses, but then somewhere in the conversation is I'm not gonna buy it. Someone else is gonna buy it. I mean, how do the sellers respond to that?
Just fine, as long as you're just open and upfront about it. The key is just don't hide anything. You know, figure out if there's a problem. And say, you know, hey, Clark, sounds like you'd really like to get rid of this thing, you know, in the next, 30, 60, 90 days, if at all possible? Great. Let me tell you how our company works. First thing, full disclosure, I have nothing to hide from you. Let me tell you how we work. And, you know, you can decide then if you want to proceed and let us go to work on your behalf or if not. Here's how my company works, right? We're always building and have built this buyer's list of people that are looking for property to buy like yours. And so what my company does is through typically an assignment of contract is, you know, we bring them deals. They pay us basically a finder's fee to bring them to them. And that's how our situation works. Again, if you have any questions on how that works, I'm happy to answer them. You know, if not, let's start getting this problem solved for you. Here's how this works. So we just disclose it. People have an issue and they can sense it when they know you're trying to hide something. And then it doesn't matter how good your offer is, they're not going to trust you. So there's nothing to hide. This is how we operate, right? And then when the contract goes over in bold print, it says buyer's sole intent is to assign this contract. And it says it again.
Right.
So, yeah, we just throw it on the table.
Do they know what the fee is that I'm going to make? Is that something that the seller ever knows?
Yeah, if you do an assignment, they do recommend that you double close. Even when you move it to somebody else. Now the assignments, it's nice and clean, but here's the thing on a double close, and it's more of a we're not attorneys, but our preference is a double close, and the reason is because it actually puts you and your company in chain of title. And when you are in chain of title, if something were ever to go sideways and somebody was to make a claim that your company doesn't close, you're just brokering deals, yada, 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 you could say, hey, wait a minute. We take title all the time. We are not just brokering deals. We take title. So now that said, I assigned a deal today, right? So, again, with a lot of things, there isn't just a black and white, but the majority of the deals that will close are double closed.
Could you explain double close? I'm not sure I understand that.
Yep, that's where you buy it and sell it in the same day. So there's an A to B transaction. The A in a double close is the seller. The B is you, and the C is your end buyer. So B is going to buy from A, and then B is going to sell to C. And it can all happen in the same day. So they're both. They both have the same time stamp on them. Now, what always comes into question on a double close is, where does the money need to come from, all right? And this is title company specific. some title companies will, and here's how this works, Clark, and this is for everybody. This is kind of cool, but this is how a double close works. So let's say I would have double closed that transaction today instead of assigned it, all right? I would have had the title company prepare the sale paperwork, so me selling the property and the end buyer, the C in this equation, my end buyer would have signed the purchase paperwork this morning at 10 a.m. And then at 2 p.m. this afternoon, I would have signed the paperwork to buy the property from the homeowner. So sell it in the morning, buy it in the afternoon, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And what happens is with different title companies is what you want to ask is when you're meeting title companies is how do you handle double closings? Can I use the end buyer's funding on the purchase, on the A to B purchase? And some title companies are yes. We've gotten a pretty decent nod, and I've just heard recently that Boston National Title will allow you to use your end buyer's funding to purchase it. If they don't, then what happens is your purchase transaction on the A to B has to come from a different source other than your end buyer, and that's where flash cash gets used. And flash cash is easy to find. It's same-day funding, basically a 24-hour loan. And here's what happens. Even if you're using flash cash, you still sell it before you buy it. Because you sell it, that transaction is good. Your end buyer's money is in escrow. And then that flash cash lender will send a wire for you to purchase it, is how that works. So there are a couple moving parts there. Obviously, we're here to help with it. You can use both, and both still get used, assignments and double closes. But we like assignments better. And again, we're not attorneys and not giving legal advice. I'll just tell you that we prefer double closes because it shows that our company actually took title. So in the event that we get accused of brokering deals, we can say, no, we take title majority of the time.
Yeah, I can see that being a kind of a safety net, but my understanding is that a lot of times we're getting into a deal before we have buyers. So we get a contract and then we got to find a buyer, right? And we got,
what should be happening is simultaneously is you're talking to sellers and buyers, whether that's you're making both phone calls or you have an acquisitions person talking to sellers and you're out meeting buyers. But yeah, those two things happen pretty simultaneously. But that doesn't determine how you close it, whether you assign it or double close it. Because you still have your inspection period on your purchase contract, which is where you're finding that buyer, collecting earnest money and getting the deal locked up. And then back to your original question, if you assign the contract, then your assignment fee will show up on the HUD. If you double close it, your end buyer and the seller will have no idea what your markup is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can see that being desirable.
So you can you can also use it to, if you feel like you need to not disclose the numbers on the transactions. So.
Okay.
What they could do anyway is, both your purchase and then your subsequent sale are going to be recorded. So either the seller or the end investor could go back into public records 30 days later and see the different, where the chain of title traded hands, but it would be, 30 days after the fact, basically, whenever the county got it recorded. So at the end of the day, they can find out if they want to, but I've never had it come up where somebody's went back in like that. It just, put together a deal that works for the seller, that works for your buyer, and, for the most part, people are good with it.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep. Good question. That was one of the more technical questions. So, Yeah, good stuff. A title, here's the thing. Find a good title company that is familiar with double closes, whether that's Boston National or somebody in your local market, and lean on them. You don't have to be a title expert. Just find a good title company that's willing to help you out. I mean, they get paid when your transactions close. So I can't tell you how many times I've leaned on a title agent and say, hey, how do we best handle this? What do I do about this? How do we get this lien cleared? Whatever, right? That's what they're there for. Just like a GC. And you say, holy cow, I just tied up a property and, you know, it's got fire damage in the kitchen. Is it salvageable? What do we do? I don't know. I'm going to lean on their input and their expertise. So this is why you want to get a hold of a good title company. And, you know, in your market, you'll probably identify your favorite title rep and close the majority of your business through them. So they're there to help with this kind of stuff. And obviously you can ask us questions too. The double close is slick for a few reasons.
Yeah, good.
Yep. Who else?
Mike, it's Janie. Hey, I don't know if you could answer this quick because I know we're running out of time. How do you do these double closes when you're working out of state?
Yeah, very easily. So title companies close all the time when they're not out of state. They will either send you documents a day or two early with a FedEx slip. That's most often what happens. And you'll just have the documents, you know, 48 hours early, grab them. You know, maybe they have another branch location in your area that you can go to. If not, they'll send them to you. You can print them up. Or you can ask them, say, hey, tell you what, save me some time and just print these first, FedEx them to me instead of emailing them over with a return envelope and a FedEx slip and all that stuff. And you just drop them in the mail and send them back. So, yeah, remote closings take place all the time, and it's usually one of two ways, by overnight mail, or they have a branch location here locally, and you just set it up with a closer. The other thing that happens is there are remote contract closers in every city USA, and so they'll go to their network and just find somebody, and they'll say, hey, meet them at this Starbucks at noon. And so-and-so is going to be, you know, they're going to do the closing on our behalf. They'll meet you there. You can sign everything up, and then they just get the docs back to them. So, yeah, it's very, it's done all day.
Yeah, I just didn't know how. Oh.
It's very, very common practice. Yep.
Okay, good.
Yep. Yeah, that's, and again, that's where you lean on a title company and say, hey, I'm here. The house is there, and the buyer's in location 3. That's what today was, out-of-state buyer. So I'm in Denver. I don't even remember where the buyer was, and the house is in Florida. And then title just, you know, Ashley at the title company coordinates the whole thing, and here we go. So,
yeah.
That's what they do. Yep. Good question. Good question. Anything else quick?
I did.
All right, everybody, good conversation as always. Anything else comes up next couple of days, get them into the coaching center so we can get a response back to you. Let's have a good few days and chat again on Thursday. Make it happen. Sound good?
Sounds like a plan. Hey, get all them deals you got on the table closed, and you'll have a great week.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, they're not going to close. We have 45-day inspection, 90-day close window to move all 24 of these. So that's how we tied that one up. Y'all, it's a partially performing pack of 24. So if anybody's interested, ask me about it on Thursday. We got to make sure we get all these contracts back tonight, though. So I'll give you an update.
All right, man. Have a good night.
All right, everybody. Yep, you too. Take care. We'll chat soon.